Good morning and welcome, everybody, to the Mark Steiner Show here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. So, you know, one of the things that Donald Trump did during his campaign was to say that he was going to deport undocumented immigrants. He was going to force Muslims to register with the United States government. He was going to ban immigration from certain places. And post-election, he has said that he intends to deport 2 to 3 million people in this country, from this country, I should say. And many people woke up to the election the day after, especially from immigrant communities and from Muslim communities, worrying and wondering what their future might be and what might happen in this country. And so we're going to tackle that question this hour with our guests. I want you to join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. By email, you can also tweet us at Mark Steiner, but do join us here at 410-319-8888. We want to hear your thoughts and ideas on all of this. We are joined in studio here by Lydia Walther-Rodriguez, who is lead organizer with CASA Baltimore. Lydia, welcome. Good to have you on the program.
Thank you.
And we have other guests line. They're there. So we are going to also have Arun Gupta, contributor to the Washington Post, Yes Magazine, In These Times, Progressive, Telesur, The Nation. He's the author of the upcoming book, Bacon as a Weapon of Mass Destruction, A Junk Food-Loving Chef's Inquiry into Taste. And he wrote the article, How Cities Can Protect People Threatened by Trumpism, for Yes Magazine, which raised some very important issues. And Zainab Chowdhury, who is Maryland Outreach Manager for the Council on American-Islamic Relations. And welcome, everybody. 410-319-8888 is the number here to join in on this conversation. So, Lydia, I'm just curious. Let's start with you. And Zainab, welcome. Good to have you with us as well.
Thank you.
So, just starting off, the day after this election, the people you represent in CASA, Latin Latino immigrants. I told the story the day after the election that I just told you before we went on the air of a young Mexican-American child who was 7 years old, son of a friend, who came into his kitchen the morning after the election in tears, that we have the new president doesn't like me. What are we going to do? And I think this, you were saying, this has been repeated over and over again in homes across the nation, across the city, across the state.
Definitely. So, you know, the day, the night of the election, the morning after it, no one slept. I think everybody stayed tuned, watching their television, you know, hoping that reality wasn't true, especially a lot of the children of our community members. A lot of our community members, when we were doing follow-ups, you know, that very next day, we heard a lot of stories of our community members saying that their children were up all night, you know, with just a blank reaction, not knowing really what to say to their parents. One of my community members told me that, you know, she watched her son, you know, stay up. She went to bed because her nerves couldn't even do it anymore. And the next morning, she knew based on the look of her teenager's face, you know. And the first thing that he asked her was, what's going to happen if you get sent back? Because I was born here. And that worry was not only from the high school students, but also the elementary school students that had a lot of those same analysis. And, you know, even going into meetings and seeing and hearing kids play and talking to each other, saying, you know, our parents might be going back. So just hearing that is just that heartbreaking of so much work that has been put into, you know, our community, so much activism, so much fight, especially even going into this election. So many folks, even if they were undocumented, they were out there knocking doors, registering people to vote, making sure that, you know, this didn't happen. And so for this to happen, I think that we are in a shock, but we are going to continue to fight to keep going forward.
And Zainab, also in all these stories so far, what's happened in the Muslim community and to people since this election, we've heard stories here I've heard that's happened here in Baltimore and places surrounding, where young women have had their hijabs snatched off their heads. Other things have happened. Talk about what's been your major concerns since the election.
We've actually had a very similar visceral reaction amongst American Muslims My 6-year-old nephew did not sleep the night of the election when the results were coming in. 2 days ago, I was talking with him, and he was quiet for a minute. And we were talking about something else, or he was quiet for a minute, and then he goes, "Is Donald Trump going to kill us?" And he's 6 years old. And my jaw just dropped to the floor, and I told him, I said, "No, what makes you think that?" And he said, "Well, he hates us." And then he said, does he hate women too? And these are the kind of questions that we're hearing in Muslim households all across the country. This, the rash of hate crimes and bias attacks has spiked tremendously in the week since the election results came in. We've had reports of Muslim students being attacked on college campuses, women having their headscarves pulled off, men who are perceived to be Muslim being attacked, physically and verbally assaulted, children being bullied in schools. It's just a very chilling climate, very hostile climate. And the xenophobia and the bigotry has become emboldened. It's not only just accepted, it's encouraged now. And I think this is a very toxic climate that unfortunately has the risk of further disenfranchising the most vulnerable communities amongst us.
One of the things that that really struck me as I was thinking about this, that President Barack Obama had an executive order that gave young people a reprieve from deportation. And that's a database now. And people are worried that that database, that the incoming president, who has promised to end that program in his first action, can now come after those people who are in that database for to deport them, all these millions of young people in this country who are in that database, or hundreds of thousands, whatever the number really is. I don't know the exact number. So, I mean, what has been, I'm curious, I'm going to start with you, Lydia, but what's been the response to that? I mean, because that, I mean, that's a reality that could take place, you know, in the first 100 days of the new administration.
Yeah, well, this is a time of uncertainty for many of our young dreamers who have fought so long to have this work permit, you know, to have this relief of deportation. They knew that it was something that they have to renew, right? It was something that had to be renewed every 2 years. And that fight was a fight that took place, started at the state level with the Maryland Dream Act, right? And then that fight going and winning DACA and, you know, having...
DACA standing for...
For deferred action for child arrivals, okay?
So this, we're talking about young people who were born in another country, who came here with their parents, who may have been undocumented, who were undocumented, came with their parents, were not born here, but lived their entire lives in America as Americans, in schools, going to school and more. Those are the kids we're talking about.
Yes, so we're talking about folks who have been here since at least 2007, right? And we're talking about high school students who came up through the school system, right? Who don't know another country but this country. This is a country that they call home. And for them to finally achieve that work permit and finally achieve that, you know, that temporary relief of deportation and now being in the state of uncertainty after they've worked so hard and our community has fought so hard. This time is a very confusing time. The state of limbo is a state of limbo that, you know, a lot of our students have concerns. What happens now? You know, there's a lot of our community members who are just now turning 15 that could qualify for DACA, for deferred action of child arrivals. But, you know, there's that hesitation now because of this uncertainty of what happens if they have my information in the database.
So, you know, and so I'm curious, you know, as we look at this, Zainab, what's your reaction? Well, I mean, you know, we know this is happening. It's coming.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we know that Donald Trump's going to be president, that the folks are going to be in this administration who really do believe that even though if the wall is only now seem to be becoming more of a euphemistic wall, but that the concept of the wall is a real kind of political philosophy about how we approach things. And we know that he's talked about deportation and the registry for Muslims. Nobody's asked him about since the election, but he talked about that during the campaign. So what is the response? What will be the organized response?
Yeah, well, first of all, we're encouraging our communities to not be afraid. And I know that that's very easy to say and very difficult, especially in this current political climate, to put into effect. But it's so important for us to not live in fear, because when we allow fear to control our thoughts and actions, that's, you know, when we give power to, you know, the forces that are trying to divide us and to defeat us. So we're encouraging our communities to not be afraid, but to be empowered. Even though right now we are in limbo and there is a lot of information that we don't know, we have no idea, you know, how things are going to play out, especially as top appointments are made in cabinet, in the Trump administration's cabinet, and in his top strategists are appointed. We're encouraging folks to gain as much knowledge and, you know, kind of arm themselves with as much knowledge as possible. And especially for undocumented members, there's an immigration attorney in Virginia. His name is Mr. Hassan Ahmed, and he published a blog on The Hill with some key steps that community members can take to just kind of, like, protect themselves and as much as possible and to empower themselves. And the first step, he said, was to for every family that has undocumented members to have a specific deportation plan ready on what they're going to do if ICE comes knocking. And this is something that they should sit down with an attorney, someone who, you know, they trust, who is knowledgeable, who can guide them and advise them based on their specific situation. Second, it's important for every immigrant to know their status. They should get an updated opinion from an experienced lawyer who knows what the current laws are, who's familiar with their personal circumstances, and who can, you know, advise them based on especially the condition of their home country and what the situation is like back home. And there's also some things that can affect eligibility for the immigration benefits, and these things change over time, and especially depending on how legislation is going to be impacted by the next administration, this is something that's especially relevant. It's also important for every immigrant to know their rights, documented or undocumented. It's important for every immigrant to know their rights. When ICE comes knocking, they have to have a warrant in order for them to question individuals. Immigrants are not required to give answers to questions. They do not have to sign waivers of their right to a hearing. And I think this is some information that maybe a lot of folks are not familiar with, or they may not have paid as much attention to. But this is really a critical time, this stage of limbo, for them to be as empowered and knowledgeable, or to seek knowledge from organizations and advocacy organizations specifically who can help provide them with that information as much as possible. And there's a few other tips, and I'm happy to forward this to you, Mark, if you want to share this on your website, or
sure.
To FAFSA if they want to share this as well. Just some concrete steps that, you know, each person who is concerned about specifically their immigration status can take to protect themselves as much as possible and to be defiantly unafraid. I know right now this is a very vulnerable time for many of our communities. I've been speaking to mosque members all across the state, and I was in San Diego last week talking to community members there, and people are afraid. But, you know, one message that I told them was that we will not be afraid. We have to be aware. We have to know what's going on. We have to protect ourselves, take measures as much as possible, engage with allies who are committed to supporting us, who are committed to working with us, to make sure our community's rights are protected and their safety is protected, but we will not live in fear.
Definitely. I would also add that knowing your rights is very, very important. And we know that, you know, we face a lot of mass deportations with President Obama as well. And there has been community members have been, you know, organizing themselves at the very grassroots level. And, you know, we were hit a lot of that with those mass deportations, especially in Baltimore County. And so
in Baltimore County.
And so there, you know, we've had.
How many people do you think from Baltimore County were deported under the last 4 years, 8 years?
I mean, I would say just from my experience between December and February of these last 2 years, I was, you know, we were getting raid responses from about every other day at 5 a.m. We were seeing immigration was there. You know, there was grassroots groups, committee members who were organizing themselves. You know, these were neighbors. These were everyday people who were stepping up as leaders and saying, you know, I know my rights. I've gone to the Know Your Rights orientation. Casa de Maryland does a lot of the Know Your Rights orientations in the neighborhoods, in the communities, at the churches. And so they wanted to take this a step further. You know, they didn't want to just know their rights and know how to protect themselves and their family, but they wanted to know how to protect their neighborhoods at that grassroots level. How can I think about just not being a victim, but how can I really defend my community that's vulnerable right now? So a lot of folks in Owens Mills, in Baltimore County, you know, they stood up, and we extended that training to really do like a defender's training of, you know, who, what, when, how many officers were there, who did they grab, you know, do you know what the community members look like, in order to start that chain of communication. And they really organized themselves, and they're continuing to organize themselves through this. We knew that it was going to be a fight regardless of who was going to be in office. This fight is going to be just a lot harder. Yet community members are ready. They're coming out of the shadows. They're organizing themselves. And, you know, knowing your rights is something key, especially for community members who weren't part of the organizing before. They're stepping up as leaders now. And so a lot of the leaders who emerged from the mass deportations early in December into February, they're becoming almost like mentors to a lot of other community members. And, you know, a lot of what some of the community members that I have been working with for almost 2 years in Owens Mills said to me, you know, I'm gonna go down fighting. I'm gonna continue to fight. You know, I'm gonna organize. I'm gonna continue to talk to my neighbors. We're gonna keep doing these Know Your Rights charlas, orientations. But what I'm really worried about is my children, you know, and this confidence that a lot of the bullies have gained from Trump now being in office, and how they're going to be talking to my children as it relates to, you know, us being an undocumented family, us being an immigrant family. So that's really their big concern. They know they're going to continue to fight, but it's really that pain and that uncertainty of what their children are going to hear. And, you know, we had this meeting with over 100 people last Thursday, and a lot of the community members said, you know, if your children don't know, this is the time to have that conversation so that you can prepare your children. Our children need to be aware of their status, and they also need to fight.
Zainab, go ahead.
And on that note, just in terms of preparing children, we've been talking with community members on specific concrete steps that they can take to open up the doors of communication, or the lines with the channels of communication with their children. Oftentimes, children don't feel comfortable talking to their family, especially their parents, about you know, what's happening at school or what's happening in the public sphere, because they're afraid that their parents are going to punish them or judge them. And we've encouraged parents that, especially and guardians, that especially in this current political climate, when children are going to be facing an increased sense of hostility outdoors, the home should be a safe place. It should be a haven where children can come home and feel safe and nurtured. And this is going to require patience and understanding from parents who, you know, otherwise might not be as compelled to listen to their child or sit down and speak with them about how their day went and what happened at school. It's more important now than ever before to instill a sense of confidence within children, to make them aware that they have a place in this country, that they belong here, that, you know, regardless of, you know, what people are telling them, that they don't belong here, or that they don't have a place here, that they have a place here that cannot be disputed, and that there are laws. I was talking to my six-year-old nephew when he said that, is Donald Trump going to kill us? And after I got over my initial shock, I talked to him a little bit, and I told him, I said, do you know what laws are? And he was quiet for a minute, and then he said, are they like rules? And I said, exactly, they're like rules. And our country is a country that's governed by laws. And, you know, we have to have faith. I know right now there's so much uncertainty, but we have to have faith that the justice system is not going to, you know, turn its back on its most vulnerable communities. And there are a lot of people out there who are standing in strong solidarity with the most vulnerable communities amongst us. And it's more important now than ever before to instill a sense of confidence, to teach our children self-defense, teach them how to stand up for themselves, teach them how to push back against the negative rhetoric that they might be hearing from their peers or on television, and to not internalize the messages that they're getting so that it doesn't affect them, especially on an emotional or on a visceral level. I know it's so much easier said than done, especially on a daily basis, but that's something that I think that the reality is that our communities are going to have to persevere and work harder to instill that sense of confidence within children.
Folks, do join us here at 410-319-8888. We want to get your thoughts. What can happen? I'm going to raise some issues here that were in some articles I just recently read about what cities can do, locations can do around the country, and what kind of actions people actually can take to begin to form some protective layer in our community. So do join us at 410-319-8888. We want to get your thoughts and ideas. You can tweet me at Mark Steiner. You can also log on to our Facebook pages. Email me at talk@steinershow.org. I'll be right back with Zainab Chowdhury and Lydia Walther Rodriguez to finish our conversation. Don't go away. Welcome back, folks. It's Mark Steiner. Good to have you with us here. Do join us, 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org by email. Tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. There are some things that were written recently, you know, and I just asked our guests about this. I want to ask you, all of our listeners, about this as well. Should our city, like Baltimore City, Montgomery County, Silver Spring, where people are listening to us from, anywhere around here, Baltimore County, should our localities not assist or cooperate with any rage of detentions or deportations of immigrants? Should that happen? In Seattle, their mayor, Ed Murray, said he would. The city will remain a sanctuary. Baltimore's not a sanctuary, by the way. I don't know if Silver Spring is or not, but Baltimore is not. That will remain a sanctuary even if they lose federal funding. And should our city not assist with registration, surveillance programs in the Islamic communities of our state? These are local things. So what do you think, should that happen? 410-319-8888. Should the city become a safe zone for immigrants, Muslims, LGBTQ folks, women, anyone fearing deportation or persecution under Trump administration? About the efforts to criminalize and attack Black Lives Matter, as some people have said, to take place. Women's right to choose. Should our city be a sanctuary? What do you think? 410-319-8888, and give us your ideas and thoughts as we finish our conversation here with Zainab Chowdhury, who is the Maryland Outreach Manager for Council on American Islamic Relations, and Lydia Walther Rodriguez, Lead Organizer for CASA in Baltimore. 410-319-8888. So that's what I was kind of talking about, Zainab, when I was talking about kind of strategies that people can take hold of and use that are not necessarily defensive, but are almost offensive, are saying we have to take a stand that is more kind of positive and in the face of what might happen.
Right. And part of that strategy has to also include engaging with our lawmakers, state lawmakers, local elected officials, highlight the concerns of our communities and let them know what the reality is on the ground and what kind of resources and assistance we need from them. Realistically speaking, at the end of the day, these are still elected officials who are answerable to their constituents, and they have an obligation to listen to the concerns of their constituents. And there is power in numbers. If we can, you know, build coalitions of diverse organizations in diverse communities who are willing to back us, you know, on the key asks that we're making, then there's a stronger likelihood that we can have elected officials listen to our concerns and actually not just listen, but translate our concern, their reaction to our concerns into concrete positive actions that can benefit our communities. This is not the time for us to cower in a corner and live in fear. There's just way too much at stake, and there are a lot of good people out there who want to work with us, who want to be allies, who want to support what we're doing. If we allow ourselves to just fixate on media headlines and social media news feeds that are giving us, like, you know, or painting a picture of a very grim reality, we're not going to be able to mobilize and work effectively. We have to be able to, at least, if not shut off the TVs, then turn down the volume and strategize amongst ourselves, engage with elected officials, engage with friendly allies who want to support the work that we're doing, and outline concrete ways that we can move forward and channel a lot of the anxiety and fear that we are having within our communities into a positive, healthy, constructive action.
Let me jump to the phone. She'll come right back at 410-319-8888. Robert, you're on the air. Welcome to the program.
Oh, hello. Let me turn out his radio. Hold on one second.
Great. Thank you, Robert.
Okay.
All right.
First of all, let me say I was very encouraged and very inspired when I happened to have been coming back into Baltimore from a talk at George Mason U. And I bump into this large millennial demonstration in solidarity with people who are, of course, threatened by persecution and opposition to, of course, the new Trump regime. So I want to commend persons who were involved in that and other things. And the only other thing I guess I want to ask is, starting yesterday, in your opinion, how do you think we need to go about forming the coalition, which I hear the young lady talking about?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, let me let our guests answer that. I mean, Lydia, you can jump into that before we go to our next caller. But this Saturday, in Baltimore anyway, there is a mass meeting, Stand Against Hate, Reject the Trump Agenda, taking place Saturday, November the 19th at 3 p.m. at the 2640 space, 2640 St. Paul Street.
2640, hold on.
At 2640 St. Paul Street.
Yeah, I know that place, 2640.
And so there are like five or six, seven groups actually, from Maryland Working Families, Tubman House, the Lawyers Guild, Unite Local 7, Action Be Local 3, who are coming together to do just that. But Lydia?
Sure.
So, what's the time again?
3 p.m.
Sorry. Okay.
Sure. So I would definitely say those coalitions are very powerful because in a time like now, especially for the immigrant community, CASA has been part of a coalition called Campaign for Justice, Safety, and Jobs. And that is a coalition with almost 30 different organizations, diverse organizations. And, you know, a lot of that we focus on that is police reform. Because as we talk about here in, you know, Baltimore City, there is that executive order that the police will not collaborate with immigration,
mm-hmm.
right? And we know that that is a executive order that Rawlings Blake put into effect. And that is something that our community, you know, trusting the police is something that is hard for the immigrant community. But building that trust comes from the reform.
Has Kevin Kamenetz done the same thing?
No, he hasn't.
In Baltimore County?
No, he hasn't. So, you know, when our community fears the police, and if the police, the city police uses funds and collaborates with immigration, that's going to cause more of a distrust from the immigrant community if crimes happen against them. And it's going to do the opposite. You know, it's going to have that effect. Our communities are going to become targets to more crimes. And so allowing Baltimore City to collaborate with, you know, immigration is only going to bring more fear, less reporting. And there's been a lot of work towards, you know, our community starting to report. And there's a lot of work to do, which is why we're part of this coalition, because this is something that also affects the Latino and immigrant community in Baltimore City. And so just knowing that there might be a possibility for, you know, for the police to collaborate with immigration, you know, we have to continue to work, and we need to continue to pressure, you know, newly coming elected officials to really support that ICE and the police do not collaborate with each other, because that's just going to only bring us into, you know, it's going to only bring us back to so much work that has already been done.
So let me go back to the phones here before we turn back to Zainab and just say that Baltimore County seems locally to be really critically important, because the majority of immigrants in this community don't live in Baltimore City, but live in Baltimore County.
I would say most of them live in Baltimore City.
Really? Yes. I thought the east side of Baltimore County is a huge immigrant community.
There is a huge immigrant community, but I would say most of the community that we've been working with is here in Baltimore City. Hmm. But there is a large amount in Baltimore County as well.
410-319-8888. Dwayne, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yeah, I have a kind of a rhetorical question to ask.
Sure, go ahead.
And the question is this. You know, are we not, like, tugging at the very foundation of our system?
Dwayne, could you turn on your radio so I can hear you better?
Is that better?
Yeah, go ahead, man. Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead. Yeah.
are we not tugging at the very foundation of the system that we want to have in this country if we're asking for a double standard, you know, instead of comprehensive immigration reform? I mean, how can we justify saying, hey, listen, we want a double standard for this, but not for nothing else? We want, you know, I want you to protect me, and I want you to do the right thing for me when I call the police, but I don't want you to enforce the laws in this. I mean, aren't we kind of asking for a double standard and shaking the very foundation of our law system?
What is that? What do you mean? To be more clear.
We can't say, hey, listen, we want you to arrest murderers and arrest people who do bad things, but for this other situation, don't follow the law on that. And we have mayors and governors saying that they won't enforce the laws on the books or enforce, you know, policy by doing so. You see what I'm saying? Are we asking for a double standard? Are we being two-faced?
Are we being two-faced?
Yeah.
So let's answer that question. Zainab, you want to start, and then we'll go to Lydia as we conclude our conversation.
I'm not quite sure I really understood the question.
I think what Duane is asking is that if there are laws in the books that say that undocumented people in this country are here illegally, and if they are arrested for another crime or stopped, you know, why shouldn't there be cooperation if they are not backing certain laws? And I think that's what he's saying. It was a double standard we're doing here because people are undocumented. Is that a double standard that certain people are asking for in the face of what might happen in the next 4 years?
Well, I think it's case specific. I think each individual who's undocumented has their own, you know, circumstances, their own story of how they ended up here. And I think it's case specific. We have to look at the broader picture. There is a lot of context that I think kind of gets lost in just painting the entire community with a broad brush. I think even especially when it comes to engaging with law enforcement, that context is so critical to help us understand, you know, what the different circumstances are and what the different stories are, and how that relationship with law enforcement is impacted by those circumstances in terms of moving forward.
Yeah, and I would add also, you know, police officers are here to protect and serve the community. And that includes all of the members of the community, regardless of their status. And so if police officers are given this ability to also play of immigration officers, they're not going to be able to protect.
Well, I think the spirit of Duane's question, and it's really an interesting question. I mean, I can hear this because it's going to be raised over and over again, which is that if people are here, not legally, and people are stopped, are we having a double standard saying, oh, we should unite with people who are not here legally? Is what I think is basically what he's saying, if they're breaking the law.
I think there needs to be unity. When a police officer should never play that role of immigration. He's not an immigration officer, and everybody has a story. Everybody has been here. There's been community members who have been here 15, 20 years. You know, it is not the role of a police officer to check or intervene in status. The role of the police officer is to make sure that the community is protected and served if there has been a crime committed against them. And if there has been a crime committed against someone who doesn't have documents, a police officer playing that role of an immigration officer cannot protect or serve that community member. And that community member is part of this community. They consider this community home.
So Zainab Chaudhry, give us some final thoughts on your community and where you think we're going from here as well.
Yeah, you know, Mark, this is a tough situation, and I think part of what makes it tough is that many of us did not expect to be in this situation. I think a lot of us are still processing the shock of, you know, how the election turned out. I mean, at the end of the day, this is a democratic process, and we accept that, you know, our president-elect is Mr. Donald Trump, and we urge our fellow Americans to hold all of our elected officials accountable and make sure that they're striving to work towards a nation that's going to unite all Americans, because right now there are people on different sides of the aisle and there's a lot of fear and anxiety and uncertainty on both sides of the aisle. And we need a leader who can be president for all people, all Americans. I would urge our community members, not just Muslim community, but also Jewish community, Latina community, undocumented immigrants, refugees, African Americans, all of the vast, diverse vast, diverse communities that are most vulnerable amongst us, I would urge them to not live in fear. And I know that's so easy to say, but this is not the time for us to be afraid. This is the time for us to work together, build coalitions, find allies, figure out how we can empower and uplift one another to push back against the intolerance and the bigotry that we're seeing in our midst, and how we can work together to defend each other's rights. Because the same forces that are going to hate one group are going to hate another group, are going to hate another group. The anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, anti-immigrant, anti-refugee mentality, they're all flip sides of the same coin. And so we're all in this together to a certain degree, and we have to work together to be able to protect our rights and live safely and freely, free from hatred and intolerance.
I want to thank you both for joining us. It's been a really good conversation, and look forward to having you both back over the coming weeks and months. Zainab Chaudhry, you just heard, is Maryland Outreach Manager for the Council on American Islamic Relations. Lydia Walther Rodriguez is Lead Organizer for CASA Baltimore. Zainab and Lydia, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having us.
We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we are going to look and see what's happening in Standing Rock with Brian Ward and Kara Lazard. Don't go away. Stay with us.